Hey, Mac, when does deer season start?
Well, if you want the best deer herd possible, Lanny, you need to start right now.
Right now.
That's why we're starting our promotion. I mean, we've got a Deer Season Starts Now promotion on plantbiologic.com where you can pick up our Game Changer soybeans, our forage soybeans, and our spring protein peas. While you're there, you might as well go ahead and pick up some brassicas like our final forage and winter bowls.
Yeah, stock up for the cool season planting right now. Listeners to the GK Podcast, if you use coupon code GKPOD, you can save an additional 10% off our entire selection of warm season, cool season, and clover food plot seed. Get started today and visit plantbiologic.com for an unforgettable fall.
Hi, I'm Jeff Foxworthy, and welcome to Gamekeeper Podcast. If you want to learn more about farming for wildlife and habitat management, then buddy, you are in the right place. Join the Gamekeeper crew direct from Mossy Oak Land Enhancement Studio as they discuss the latest wildlife and habitat management practices, news, and of course, hunting. There's no telling what you'll learn, but I'm going to tell you, I bet it's interesting. Enjoy.
We are live in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome, everybody. West Point, Mississippi, home of Mossy Oak brand camo, the Gamekeeper Studio.
And there's people running up down the highway everywhere.
It's crazy out there. We got a little rain yesterday, and I say little.
A little bit, and it put everybody in food plot mode.
It sure did.
It actually made me late for the podcast.
Well,
I can see how, but
you're always late for the podcast.
Good point.
Nothing new there. No. So, but you know, when you look around on some of the Facebook forums, there were so many people that were just so excited yesterday to get some rain. And I think, you know, except for North Mississippi, it looked like a lot of people got some rain.
Yeah, I think we were about the line right here. So south of us. Got, you know, some, I wouldn't say significant, I would say some moisture.
Mm. Parts of South Alabama got several inches of rain.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they really
That'd
did.
Be nice.
They had some yellow going That'd across.
Wow, oh, man.
We just had,
a little light green. That's right. A little bit
But
of
it was
green.
Slow. It may have soaked in better.
Yeah, I checked out there. You know, we were going to try to plant, but it's still just too dry. So
Wow.
That's amazing.
Anything more than that.
So, you know, we kind of have a little new setup here. It's Richie's got a new board over there.
He's stepping the game up.
Well, like you said, you know, the boys were on Rick and Bubba.
And yeah, I came back
to,
giving
to
you a bunch
step
of stuff.
Up to the game, you know, step up to the plate there.
Well, didn't we buy this board like a year ago and you're just now putting
Nine months ago.
Well, you got to take one trip to Rick and Bubba.
That's pretty cool. We have our own track. I think that's what it's called. Own channel.
Yeah. You got your
high tech. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to turn a switch off and turn another one on so somebody can talk.
I do notice a lot less duct tape over there.
Yeah. Well, it was painter's tape.
Good job, Richie. Proud of you.
Well, so let's talk about blood on the biologic, brought to you by LS Tractors. You've spent some time on one lately, I think.
Oh, I spent a lot of time. Hayden spent a lot of time. Toxie spent a lot of time. It is LS tractor season around here.
So I tell you what, there's a couple I noticed. Camille Stewart, young
Who's
lady,
that?
Brick Stewart's daughter, killed her first deer as a doe with a rifle.
All right.
But in a biologic food plot, a really, really exciting young lady, and I was real proud for her.
Love seeing those kids starting out hunting.
Yeah.
It's the future,
That is really, really good. They've obviously got a lot more rain than we have.
So they actually had a food plot.
They had a food plot,
Like a bunch of cultivated dirt.
Yeah. So I don't know if y'all saw, but, you know, I follow the juries. They're always posting big deer, and Chris Probst killed one that scored 191.
That's pretty big.
It's just like, you know, how do they do it? All the time.
I don't know. But you kind of just, it's like when I say that, nobody's surprised.
When you said the juries, I was like, here's a 190. You know what I mean?
And there it was.
Well,
there
it's real estate, but, you know, the repeatability of those guys is insane.
Well, I'm going to tell you what, Mark is a big deer scientist. I mean, he keeps track of everything. So
I got one more. I've got
another one as well.
Oh, okay, go ahead with yours.
Job. Well, Ann Mac Boozer from South Carolina got her first deer, a big old 8-point.
Wow.
That's the daughter of Michael Boozer. We know all of them through the Rolling Thunder clan.
Nice.
Yeah.
Congrats to her. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
A real 8.
So, well, the way we're doing this is exactly how I'd hoped it would be. A lot of first timers. So I've got another one, but we got a friend named Brandon Adams, and he's got a son named John, and John and his sister, Anna, went out the sister and the little brother went out, and Anna decided she wasn't going to shoot one. She had a couple opportunities, and she said, "Nope, I'm going to let my little brother." And he killed his first with a crossbow. It was a nice little buck, and I mean, it was just a great hunt. But hats off to the sister for doing that.
Yeah, look at there.
Yeah, so
gamekeeper sharing is right there.
Sharing is caring. Yeah, they say.
John Adams got his first deer. So that, hashtag guy, if you do the hashtag blood on the biologic, we'll see those things.
Yeah,
cool.
I don't know how, but we will see those.
It's just like YouTube, they're everywhere.
And yeah. and put their name with the photo as well, because we do get a lot of photos with no name.
Nosler Ballistic Tip Ammunition is made for knocking down deer right where they stand. Nosler's Ballistic Tip bullet is the key. It has the controlled expansion and bone-crushing punch to turn a whitetail's lights out. Bring home more deer this year with Ballistic Tip Ammunition. Buy now at Nosler.com.
The Furminator is the industry's most versatile piece of food plot equipment, allowing plotters to do every step of the process, working the soil, adding seed and soil supplements, and compacting. From start to finish, with a single implement, it's hassle-free by design. Set it for the seed size and simply drive the tractor, and the Furminator does the rest. Check it out at theferminator.com.
So today, guys, we're going to be talking bow hunting. And we've got a lot of different things to talk about here. A lot of directions this topic can go. But we've got a guest, Brody Swisher, who is the editor of bowhunting.com, which is a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Huge deal.
Yeah. And I mean, they've been around a long time. I remember long Todd Graff time. From yeah. hanging around years ago. Yeah. So we've been following bowhunting.com. You write for mossyoak.com.
Absolutely. Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Honored to be a part of that and love contributing, you know, right here at home, Mossy Oak. So.
Yeah. And then sitting next to you is probably the youngest person we've had come in here and sit on the couch, Remy.
Remy in the house.
Remy Swisher. Right. I think he's 10 years old.
That's right.
Now, Remy, I don't know if your dad told you, but we don't cuss in here. We just, if you would, just kind of keep it. We're a little family show, if you don't mind.
PG, buddy.
And tell me a little bit about yourself. Are you, you got a girlfriend?
No, not yet.
Not yet. Well, keep those options open.
Not yet.
He's a handsome young man. He's got a little Mr. Fox t-shirt on.
They're looking good over there. You got the tree stand. We got Bottomland on, the Mr. Fox stuff.
Rimbo.
Well, Remy, we appreciate you being here.
Yeah.
And we'll get around to you, so just be prepared. You're going to have some questions come at you in a little bit. So, Brody, the topic of bow hunting, I mean, gosh, we all love October and when the white oak acorns start falling. It's just a magical time of the year.
Yeah.
But I'd like to start there and maybe talk about how you isolate maybe feed trees and how or some of your tactics early in the season. I think you're hunting around Tennessee and Kentucky
That's right.
And you're probably keying in on the same things we are around here.
That's right. A lot of the same stuff. And for us, it's that transition. These ag fields are coming out, you know, and we've been watching them in the beans and corn's being cut. And, but man, it's like everybody's like, man, where'd the deer go? Or they're saying, oh, October lull or whatever it is. And it's like, dude, it's a white oaks. You know, for us, it's white oaks. Mm-hmm. You know, they found those feed trees, you know, in the timber and that's where I find them. That's where they go. You know, it's, you got guys that say, man, oh, those deer are nocturnal. It's a nocturnal buck, you know. And I personally think a deer's got to eat, you know, so much food that he ain't going to be, you know, laid up all the time. You know what I'm saying? They've got to be eating all day long and they're going to be feeding somewhere. It's just finding that, like you said, that feed tree. A lot of guys go in there and they get all excited because there's, you know, acorns all over the ground and they're fired up. Man, I found acorns there everywhere, white oaks. And that sounds good. But, you know, as you said, it's got to be that feed tree, that one tree. And so, for me, that's a lot of boots on the ground and just covering some ground. Because finding white oaks is not enough. You got to find the white oak.
Yeah. And you can find deer sign, but you got to find some buck sign if you really if you're trying to key in on trying to kill. So, I kind of took over that for a second. But if you're just talking about killing deer.
That's right.
What you said is perfect. But in my mind, I want to get to how do you identify some of these mature deer that you kill and how do you zero in on those? So that's kind of ultimately where I want to go with this conversation.
Absolutely. You know, for me, it's going back to some of that scouting we did before, knowing those bucks in the area and really just getting between that feed tree and getting where, you know, we know that old boy's been hanging out, you know, the bedding area. And, you know, I think guys in the Midwest may say, oh, well, this is his bed. And where I am in West Tennessee, it may be his bed one day, but the next day he's elsewhere, you know. But it's fine in that thicket that, you know, he, from your scouting, he's been hanging out. And then, you know, really identifying. I'm not going to sit here and tell you, man, I know that's old, you know, big boy right there, his track. I know it was legendary track or whatever.
Yeah,
but
old split toe.
Old split toe, you know. But you can see those oversized tracks and then just those oversized turds. It's turds. Mm-hmm. Can we say turds, Remy?
Yeah, you can say turds. Yeah.
We can say turds.
Highly,
you know,
that's highly acceptable.
That's
bull,
right.
Bull turds.
Bull turds, yeah. So those are the big things. You know, bigger beds, bigger turds, and, you know, bigger tracks. And just, again, going back to your scouting, your intel, trail cameras, knowing, hey, he's been hanging out in here, and then now it's just he's going to be feeding here. So let's get between them.
It really is interesting how you can walk through some big woods on a good acorn year, and there just be acorns everywhere.
Yeah,
and then but you find that one tree,
yeah,
and they may have eaten a lot of them, but for whatever reason, that's just the hot item.
That's right. Yeah,
and then some years there's not many acorns at all out there, but if you find that one that's dropping.
Yeah,
you're going to be where they want to be.
That's right.
Dudley, as a tree guy, what do you think is making that one tree be preferred over another?
I think a lot of people will say tannins and the amount of tannic acid in the acorns, but I think there's a lot more to it than that.
Hmm.
You know, just the same way deer seem to know that, you know, one portion of a field is more nutritious to them or whatever, they can. Their brain and their stomach and their senses are connected much more than ours are. And for whatever reason, they're gonna go to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's good. And I wonder too, while we're throwing questions at you on the tree man, how long will they feed on that? That was my other question. Like, you know, you see them here for a little bit and you got to get them, you know, strike while it's hot. You know, that feed tree, that feed tree is not going to be the feed tree, you know, all day, all week long, or all month long, or whatever. It's going to be hit, and then they're moving on to the next. We got to find that next one. So what is, how long is a tree good for me?
It seems like, and this is stuff that we learn collecting seed a lot, you know, because we're out in the field, and we're going to some of these trees that the deer absolutely love. And even when the acorns or whatever is gone, they'll often, you know, keep coming back. And I don't know if that's just the smell of deer making them feel more comfortable.
Yep.
You know, they're obviously trying to get that last morsel before they start scouting for another tree that they like.
Yep.
But they literally will come back for at least a couple weeks after the last acorn is dropped.
That's good.
I think we've all seen some of that.
Yep. And then Mother Nature kind of times everything so it doesn't all fall at the same time.
That's right.
Pretty interesting there.
Right. Yeah. And then there's, you know, there's some oaks. I mean, I could talk for days about this, but my buddy Mariah Boggess did that study a few years ago at Mississippi State where he collected all of these red oak acorns specifically and then threw them back out. It was kind of a complicated study, but best I can tell is, you know, deer will check some of these trees.
And
it may not be ready for them yet. You know, but in time, they'll hit on those as well. It may not be until February. But every acorn is precious. It just depends on when they're ready to eat it, it seems like.
Yeah.
How do you develop your strategy for a hunting a mature buck? Is it a lot of camera work, a lot of getting in on the ground with binoculars?
Yeah. For me, it's a little of both. I don't run a lot of trail cameras. In fact, last year, I don't think I ran a camera at one. I went back and I wanted that surprise factor that I've been missing, you know, of just sitting in the stand and not knowing what in the world might walk by. You know, I think we get bogged down so many times and all worried about one particular buck or whatever. And that's fun, but I love the not knowing too what's going to show up. And this year I've gone back to that though and running some cameras, be it just standard cameras, be it, you know, cell camera as well, a little of both. And just, there's not a greater tool, you know, that's come along for scouting than that, you know, that particular deal, using the camera. But putting those out, and yeah, just some of those hot spots, those highways through the woods, you know, travel corridors that I know there's going to be deer through here. And sooner or later he's going to walk by, you're going to catch him. And so that, and then, yeah, I still do a lot of the, you know, just long distance scouting, spotting scope, binos from a distance, you know, kind of stay back off and see. I've got several places in the timber. You know, a lot of guys think, oh, it's just glassing, you know, fields and stuff, early season tactics. Well, like I said, once they move into the woods, you know, you're not going to be seeing them out in those bean fields when everything's yellowed up. And but I've got several spots that I, you know, specifically have where I can watch from a distance and watch into the timber, you know, more open timber, and see those deer cruising through. And so I do, I key on, you know, keying on that, you know, trail cam data, as well as just, you know, scouting from a distance with the glass. You know, those two are definitely big ones for me. And a lot of it though, man, it's just kind of knowing historically how those deer travel. And, you know, it comes down to woodsmanship. You know, we love on X, we preach it all the time, use it every day of my life, but man, nothing again replaces on that piece of property, which you can just know by being in there and knowing, hey, this is what deer do right here. You know, they've been doing it for here longer than I've been alive. There've been deer coming, running through this piece. They do it. This is the way God created this ground. And this is the way, you know, those deer travel through it. And just when you start knowing how those deer travel, be it saddles, be it those little bottlenecks, pinch points, you know, funnels, all that stuff. Once you realize that piece, you know, that woodsman skill is kind of developed and you ascertain that, man, it's kind of a lot of times for me, it's just like, they're going to do that every year. You know, I can go scout and say, I wonder where he is now, but, you know, he's coming down the same highway. You know, everybody comes down the same highway out here. That's what you got to do to get through West Point, come right through here. There's a lot of places like that, you know, right there in the Whitetail Woods as well. They're going to come down this because that's what they do. That's the highway, you know.
Yeah. You know, through the years, when I think back of, like, learning things that helped unlock a property, a lot of times it was if I hit a deer in the process of blood trailing it, yeah, or if it might lead you someplace that you might not have ever paid much attention to. And when you're in there in the dark, you know, looking – or the whatever it is, you, yeah, might just, oh my, this is where he, okay, this makes sense now. You just learn a lot that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a spot I hunted this past year. I killed a nice buck there in Tennessee, and same kind of deal. It's a field that's grown up, and I hate it, you know, because it's grown up and the turkeys don't strut in anymore, but it's turned into a deer sanctuary, you know. And it's been several years. It's great. It's got trees starting to grow up in it, and it's all the stuff you don't want as a rifle hunter, right? You want to be able to look out there and see, mm-hmm, and watch. But for bow hunting, man, you know, it's just, I've learned the last couple of years, like, man, those deer in there. And all of a sudden you go from thinking like, oh, are we near the bedding area? The bedding area must be there. They're going to be coming through here. And I've just kind of come to realization that is a bedding area. All of a sudden these deer stand up like, where'd he come from? He just stood up in there, the old briars and just thick, nasty stuff. And like you just said, Bobby, I mean, I shot that buck right coming up the edge of that stuff last year during the rut, and you know, thumped him at 15 yards. He ran out in that stuff and he died out there. When we went out to retrieve him, man, we're seeing beds everywhere. And that's when we realized, oh, this is it. You know, we're not waiting on him to come through cruising by or whatever. This is the bed. That's why he's cruising this side of the field. He's cruising to get that downwind side and check this whole field for hot does. And there were beds everywhere out there. And so we just went this year and trimmed out a few lanes to open some stuff up, give them some lanes to walk back to us in that stand. And yeah, you do. You discover those beds when you go blood trailing. You figure out, you know, because a lot of times, like you said, you shoot that deer and with a bow, he's going to run back to, you know, his bed or his sanctuary. And so you can pinpoint him pretty good doing that.
Lanny, you got something you want to jump in with?
You know, bow hunting, I was going back to what you said. I find this very interesting about how you have kind of went away from game cameras. Hmm. And I think that's you're seeing that across the hunting public, because the wonder, you know, just the mystery of being up there. I found that kind of interesting. So I don't guess that's a specific question. It's just an observation, but
an affirmation of what
an affirmation. I mean, I get it, you know,
and you're the guy that I saw yesterday when I pulled up, you were trying to set up a cell cam.
Yeah. I mean, it's the greatest thing in the world.
That's right.
It is for, and for kids too, for my kids, you know, get them excited about hunting. But there is just this, I'm going to age myself, but you know, when you get out there and you didn't have anything and you just waited and wondered what was going on. Yeah.
I don't disagree with anything y'all are saying, but I do think the knowing outweighs the not knowing.
Absolutely.
I would agree too. you just kind of miss some of that.
Yes.
That wonderment.
And oftentimes you don't get to see them all. Mm-hmm. But there's another aspect of this. Like today, I got a text a few minutes ago on Brody Spartan's our sponsor. We all have Spartan cameras.
Yeah.
I got one just a few minutes ago. I can show y'all. Somebody on a four-wheeler's riding rode by.
What?
So immediately, I send a text and Larry's trying to figure out what's going on. But that's very helpful. Absolutely. To know that.
Oh, they're great tools. They really are. So, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah,
but it's like, don't not go hunting because you don't have 150-inch deer on your camera. You know what I mean? Yeah,
that's a good point.
Go.
That's right.
And I need to go bow hunting. I do. I'm listening to you talk. I'm like, I miss that.
How many deer do you miss that walk, 50 yards away from your camera?
Yeah, they're not there. Yeah.
Especially in the summertime. I mean, you could move a camera 100 yards and get pictures of an old buck every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And never have gotten the first picture of him, 100 yards before that.
That's right. Yeah.
So I guess I say all that and I didn't even ask you a question. So how did you get into bow hunting?
Yeah, man. So for me, the journey started way back. Gosh, I don't even know what year it was, man. Back in the early 90s. And I had a guy from church lived around the block from me. We're out there just playing, doing kid stuff, riding bikes. And I drive by and I said, that's Mr. Glover. And Mr. Glover's over there in the yard. We lived in the neighborhood back then. And Mr. Glover's in the yard. And I said, that's Mr. Glover from church. And look over there, and he's got this compound bow. And he's drawing back in his yard and in the neighborhood and shooting this big foam target out there. And I thought, look at you. Just watching that arrow zip across there. And I rode over on my bike, Mr. Glover, And he said, we struck up conversation, started talking. And he saw in my eyes, man, he said, no, this boy needs to. He said, you want to try this? And he went and got a little bear recurve bow, and I started shooting beside him, and I started hearing him telling stories about some of the places that I now hunt myself, adventure stories. And he let me borrow that little bear recurve, and I went over and bought just some of the cheapest, I don't know what they were, from the store.
2117.
Yeah, they were aluminum all day long, yeah. And just bought some cheap arrows, man, and got started flinging in the yard. I bought one of these targets, a little square target. You'd shoot through it every shot, It wouldn't even stop an arrow, but bought one of those and just started shooting. He was kind of coaching me. And then he gave me an old Bow Hunter Digest. I think it was Chuck Adams, whoever it was. And so it was all black and white. I mean, I sit there on the toilet reading that stuff and, I was like, fascinated by it, seeing the pictures and all the stuff. And I said, I got to do this.
Yeah.
Started shooting with Mr. Glover and then shooting in the backyard. And man, I went out there. My first bow hunt, it was a joke. I mean, it was craziest hunt with my dad, Papa Swish. And we went out there and I went and bought, like I said, bought the arrows and I went and bought a $9.99 pack of broadheads. Whatever the most generic little deal.
Probably Thunderheads.
Well, no, they weren't even Thunderheads. It was like an Allen or something, Yeah. I mean, it was, and three arrows screwed on the broadheads, fixed blades, and I had to recurve, no quiver, nothing. Recurve in one hand. My dad drove me out there, this little piece of ground we had permission to hunt. Arrows in the other hand. No quiver, nothing. No more broadheads, just grind. All three arrows in the hand. As unsafe as you could possibly get. I'll never forget that. Of course, I didn't have a clue about this place. A little 40-acre piece of ground is all it was. We got permission. Bow in one hand, arrows in the other hand. I'm walking out there, just so unsafe. I step over a copperhead. It bows up on my dad behind. Just a cluster and a mess that morning. But I'm bow hunting. We get out there, and I cross the creek. And I was, I thought I was a big boy. I was probably 12 or 13, whatever it was. I said, Dad, you stay over here on this side of the creek. I'm going to go over there and get on my own. And I took a little dove stool, one of them fold out deals, and set up by the tree. And again, man, I didn't have a clue. Set up against that tree. My dad's over there 40, 50 yards across the creek. And I put the arrow on the string. And man, I thought I was big stuff. First time bow hunting. And I'd gotten, bought me a little grunt call and some rattling antlers and stuff, just doing what you thought you're supposed to do,
Yeah.
And I'll never forget it, man. We never saw a deer that morning. But I'll never forget, I had that grunt call. So, man, I watch these videos, these guys do this grunt call, you blow the grunt call. And I'm sitting there, got my bow in my hand, thinking they're going to come in fast and blow this grunt call. And my dad over 40, 50 yards away thought I was calling him. He heard the grunt call. He goes, hey. And I said, and he's like, yo. And I'm like trying to yell at him to. I'm bow hunting over here.
I'm calling deer.
And every time I would grunt or rattle, whatever, he'd go, what you need, boy? You know, and it was the biggest cluster of a bow hunt ever. But that was my first bow hunt, and that's what got me. Mr. Glover got me started. But, man, just watching that flight of that arrow, being able to see it, that's what I love about it. That's what I love about bow hunting, just to be able to see that arrow and then just that close encounter, man. I realized
how close.
Yeah, man, I realized what I was missing. That's what I tell people when it comes to bow hunting. That's two things, is just a close encounter, the intimacy of the game, but also just what I was missing out. When I figured out that, man, I wasn't starting deer hunting until November on the youth hunt, and I realized that we could start in September for bow hunting. I was like, hold up now. Nobody told me that.
Yeah,
you know,
game
I've been, on. I've been missing out a month and a half, you know, whatever. And so that's kind of what got it all going on.
There really is something about bow hunting. When they get close, it's like turkey hunting to me, yeah. You know, up close.
Yeah.
You get more excited.
It is the most intense hunt. I do, even turkey hunting. I mean, I get frozen. Y'all know I get excited about turkey hunting. There's no doubt about it. And love it. But shooting a whitetail with a bow at close range is one of the most exhilarating things you can do as a human being. I have to personally close my mouth because my heart is beating so hard.
You can hear it.
Yep.
And then, you know, you're either the one that gets tore up, you know, and then makes the shot and calms down, or you're the calm guy that after he gets the shot completely melts down.
Fall apart.
I'm the fall apart guy after I do the shot. Mm. But anyways, it is magical. And just, I've gotten away from it, you know, probably because of time. You know, it takes, you got to be dedicated and you got to have some time to do it. But I'm excited. I've got a couple of young boys that are eagerly wanting to get started in it. So I'm looking forward to getting perched back up in a tree with them too soon.
Yep. Remy, is your dad a pretty good coach, bow hunting coach?
He's really good.
Good.
Yeah, there you go.
Man, that's a good. That's what you're supposed to say.
Yeah. Right. You read the cue card. Yeah.
Give him another one.
So Brody, as a guy who's interested in bow hunting and interested in recruiting others and teaching about the sport, I've heard a lot about you, giving seminars and stuff. So just kind of go through. You think, are you one of these, you know, or are you telling a guy he needs to shoot every day, once a week, or what's a style that you think works?
Yeah, and I think that just evolves depending on, you know, where you're coming in at. But yeah, you know, I start off early on, spring, summer, and I'm just shooting all the time. You know, shoot every chance you get, building those muscles. A lot of people don't realize, I mean, you got whole different stuff when you're drawing that bow. Yeah. You know, they think, I'm pretty strong. I got these big biceps. I got the guns. But then it's like, that don't matter when you're drawing that bow. You better have some stuff in your back, your lower back, your upper, you know, all that. There's just muscles you don't use. And so I tell people, shoot as much as you can. And then I like the idea of, you know, as season comes on, you start to tailor that down. Realize you don't get just unlimited shots. You know, a lot of guys do I'm going to shoot one arrow today.
Yeah.
And one arrow, because if that's all I'm going to have on that shot, and you better make it count. So you get in a deal, it's like, man, I got a whole bucket of arrows here, and I'm just going to keep launching. You mess up, you don't think about it. But when you know I've got one arrow to make it count, that's it. And so just that routine, get those muscles built up, and then start focusing on making that one shot count. It's good. But, you know, a lot of guys will, you know, get out there, and they've got whatever the regimen is, you know, they do and go through the preseason, you know, deal. Mine's all over the place, you know, but I've started really getting out with my kiddos. And, like I said, I shoot by myself, but man, I think getting around some other people is big, you know, just getting around, having somebody watch you. You know, my boy older boy likes to go out and shoot by himself. And I said, man, I'm gonna come watch you and breathe down your neck a little bit. You know, you're shooting good out here, but what about if I'm standing over your shoulder and blowing in your shoulder and, you know, and making all the noises, and then all of a sudden you see the marrow start spreading, you know, just the pressure. I mean, it's hard to prepare for that pressure.
What kind of pounder did you shoot? Tell me about your bow setup.
Yeah.
The rig.
Yeah. So I've been shooting a Matthews bow for a long time. Just love the Matthews. And in my mind, it's kind of the Cadillac of bows. And there's a good, you know, everybody's got good bows now, but Matthews has been, you know, one I've shot for a long time, and the Phase 4. And it's crazy how the bows have come. When I first started shooting, it seemed like they were 42-inch long axle-to-axle bows, and now this little bow I've got, I guess, 29 inches axle-to-axle, and you strap it on your backpack. And, and so that's my setup, super smooth. You know, it's been, you know, fascinating to watch the change in bows, how we went from trying to be the fastest bow, and then they, you know, PSE found it, man. They got just crazy speeds, and then, you know, got to be, okay, now who can make the shortest bow, you know, and then they got down to a 30-inch and then 28, you know, just – short, and then they went after smoothness and all the different things, you know, and now it's all about just kind of integration and accessories integrated into the bow. But for me, I love something that's real maneuverable for the tree stand. And again, that 29-inch axle-to-axle bow is slick, be it ground blind, tree stand, whatever I'm doing. I used to shoot 70 pounds, maxed out at 70 pounds, and older I get, it's easing on down. You know, I'm shooting low 60s now, and the bows are so efficient now. You don't have to shoot. You know, we used to think, oh, man, macho man, you got to shoot 80, 85 pounds or whatever. And it was all a man test, you know. But nowadays, these bows shooting 55 pounds are as efficient as those 80-pound bows were back then. So, anyway, for me, it's, 28-inch draw length bow. And I'm used, like I said, 62, 64-pound draw weight.
What kind of broadheads you shooting?
Man, I shoot a little bit of everything. I really do. I shoot a little bit of everything. I've got a couple of deer I've killed this year were Sever broadheads. It's S-E-V-R, Sever, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And I've been really impressed with them. I shot a couple of does with them. I shot my velvet buck with them, and just pretty nasty. The mechanical head, and man, that's what you want to get a debate started, start talking about, you know, fixed blades, mechanicals, and I love them both. Somebody says, which one do you like? I said, I love them both. And, they both have their, there's times and, whatever, different, situations. You might like one more than the other, but I see a lot of guys really trying to use a broadhead as a band-aid. You know what I'm saying? They want to, oh, I like this because it allows me to,
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. And that's a lot of gear. That's a lot of gear. You want heavier arrows because I want it to penetrate. If I make a bad shot, it's like, man, you need to spend more time making sure you make a good shot instead of trying to find the gear to help you out, for failure, hone in on that. We all do, but I love that mechanical just from standpoint you do. You got a little wiggle room there, a little room for error. But boy, it's sure hard to beat that fixed blade at the same time. Fixed blade to go through that animal and he doesn't know he's hit. He thinks he's bee stung and he'll jerk around, look back what bit him, and he'll stand there and fall over dead. Whereas a lot of times that mechanical is sitting there, it doesn't go out, it doesn't pass through maybe. And it's just, he's running and he's going to run till he's done because that arrow's, sticking out or whatever and scaring him to death. And he keeps running, but they all have their charm. I love them all.
Yeah. I've had just the opposite with those, mechanical bro. I've get really good pass through. I've shot shooting the rages for a number of years. The jury's got me on those, but I've had nothing but good experiences with those.
Yeah. Well, the rages. Yeah. And I didn't get to that point, but the rages, what I've shot, and that's what you shot. Rimbo shot his crossbow doe, a couple weeks ago and with the rage, and that's what I've shot. And this year I've just tried these Severs just to try something different and put them to the test. And we do a lot of that with bowhunting.com. We're always trying new stuff, but man, you got people that love them, hate them, on the rage all the time, but I've never had any problems with them, man. And that's what I always go back to is that the thing about that rage is I don't have to worry. I don't have to guess. You see guys spending all this time, man, I got to tune my broadheads, make sure this and that. Now, broadheads flying a little different, man. Go back and shoot the rage. The rage is the one I know. I don't have to wonder. It's shooting like my field point. It's right there with it, and it's hard to beat. Yeah, it's just devastating.
Couple questions on your setups.
Yeah.
How high?
For my tree stand? Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. And that kind of like my draw weight getting smaller and smaller.
I'm going through the same thing.
I'm 46 years old. I don't feel like I'm that old, but man, I look at my tree stand climbing days. I'm like, man, I must be getting old because I don't go that high anymore. But man, I tell you honestly, it's gotten, and we can talk more if we want to get into talking about these saddle setups, but the climbing thing, I used to be the 25-foot, climb up 25-foot and hang on either one. I thought, get above 20, and you can get away with a lot of stuff. You get above 22 feet or so, and that's still true. But, man, I've kind of gotten a kick lately out of these last couple of years. I've been doing the saddle thing, and even saddle or just a hang-on stand, and, man, I've gotten a kick out of hunting from, like, 8 foot off the ground. I know it sounds crazy.
Yeah.
But find a little beech tree with lots of cover that holds its cover a lot. Little tree that I can scamper up like a squirrel, get in, hang the saddle. And man, it has been so much fun for me to shoot a deer 8 foot off. The two does I shot the other day, both of them, shot them at 10 yards. And I know my feet was less than 8 foot, wow. And they didn't have a clue in the world. I mean, you get a good setup, good, good cover right there, good camo, obviously, and you can get away with that stuff. And that's been fun because, man, when you're 8 foot off the ground, you're looking eyeball to eyeball, and it's just that, it's everything that you love that eye-to-eye, game with, and it's been fun. So it's gotten real low, 10 foot these days hunting out of the stand. It's been getting on down.
Well, that, in my mind, that's what archery is about, is getting close.
That's right.
So
yeah, I can tell you the intensity of shooting a deer on the ground with a bow versus a tree stand, it steps it up a level when you're looking at them eye to eye. It really does.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Dudley, like you just said, man, that's bow hunting for me. It's like we said a minute ago, getting close. A lot of guys are getting where it's like, oh man, we can shoot this compound bow and it's so engineered, it can shoot out there to, you know, 80, 90 yards, 100 yards. And you know, we've talked about that so much and several articles lately about it. Just, is it, you know, is it how far you can shoot or is it how close can you get? I think the Wenzel brothers, you know, mentioned that years ago.
Yeah,
how close can you get to them, man? That's what it's about for me. It's like, I want to get up there where I can smell his breath. I can hear him munching on them acorn, you know, just whatever it is. I want to get up in his business. And how close can I get? That's the challenge. Not, hey, man, can I lob one out there at 90 and shoot that deer, you know?
Right. And that's why Mossy Oak's here right there, about getting close as you can get.
That's right. Yep.
You know, y'all talk about eye to eye with them. It made me think, 10 years ago, Lane, I went and bow hunted out in Texas at this, and their blinds were underground.
Mm.
Oh man, you're shooting up at them?
So there's an area there that would, you know, about 18 inches above ground, but the whole blind, you crawl down into it.
Wow.
And then so when there were several times when the first thing you would see were just the deer's legs as they would walk up.
Oh wow.
So that was a really whole different perspective.
Oh yeah. That's wild.
But I don't know that it ever caught on, but that particular ranch, that's how they'd set theirs up.
That's cool.
Yeah. So let's talk about that that ranging and that distance there a little bit. It seems like in the last, I'm going to say 10 years, it's just really gotten popular for guys to see how far they can shoot. And that just, we kind of touched on a little bit, but I just want to go just a little bit further. There's so many things that can go wrong in that scenario. Yeah. But you see guys all the time with discipline and practice, you certainly can shoot that far. Absolutely. Accurately.
Absolutely. And yeah.
I think the secret, and Brody can extrapolate on that a little more. Is that the right word? But you practice a lot further than you're going to shoot.
Yeah.
So that sounds like a lot of fun to practice at 100 yards and see how well you can do. But I don't think that means you're necessarily going to shoot at a deer at 100 yards.
That's right.
If you're comfortable at 100 on the range, maybe you are comfortable at 60 if the conditions are right.
That's right. You know? Yeah, absolutely. And I do, you know, I've got pin set up or my slider set up where I can dial it out there to 100. And like you said, man, it's fun just to shoot 100 yards. It's fun to launch one out there. And again, it's just something special about the flight of the air, watching that sucker drop in there and hit the target, or in my case, hit the block somewhere, you know, at 100 yards. You know, I mean, it's just cool to watch that flight of that. And it is good. You know, I know the Drury's talked about it for years, just practicing for more. That way, when you walk up there or when they walk up there in bow range, you're ready to go. And I liken it to back in Little League, we used to put the donut on the ball bat and you sit there and swing that while you're on deck, you know, and you take it off and the bat feels light. And it's like, oh, I got this. You know, it's just something different. But same principle. I mean, you know, you practice at 80, you know, 100, whatever, and you get where I'm good. I'm hitting that little, you know, little card or that little, you know, that little pie plate at, you know, 100 yards every time. And then you walk up there, makes that 40, 50 yard shot. Just, it does feel like a chip shot. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I've been hitting 100 all day. Now I walk up there and that 40, 50 is close. And so you need to practice for more, you know, practice those further distances. And then, man, I tell people, find a target that's not just so monstrous target. Because a lot of times we buy these 3D targets and they're huge. And, you know, you get this big monster buck and you get out there and that's what you've been practicing on. And this huge target, and you get out there, we like to shoot does. I mean, we shoot a lot of does, and you get out there and here comes a little doe comes up, and I mean, you've been practicing on this monster target, and all of a sudden, what happened?
Right.
Yeah, that doe looks a lot smaller than that target in the backyard. But Bobby, to answer your question, I think for me, it's 40 yards, or it used to be 40 yards. It's getting closer than that, man. As far as max for me, and I know a lot of guys, oh, you're crazy. You just need to practice more or whatever, but I just feel like beyond 40 yards, like you said, that deer can do a lot of stuff. And I've watched them flip directions, you know. And again, that's all about, you know, body language and paying attention to what they're doing and how they are and, you know, as to how they might react. But, my gosh, man, after 40 yards, those deer get looking really small. And that's just easy. For me, you know, 30 yards really anymore. I've missed a couple. I've missed twice this year. You know, it was 35 yards and I just didn't give it enough. And, you know, deer reacted, whatever, or maybe the deer didn't react, you know, and they get out there for me anymore past 35 and that deer starts looking really, really, again, you know, a lot of these does anyway. And so for me, it's kind of 40 yards is where I've done. That's what I was taught early on in bow hunter education, you know, years ago. 40 yards is all you should ever do, you know. And I'm not here to tell anybody what they can do because there's a lot of guys that got the skills well beyond me, probably most of the folks out there. But for me, that's where I try to keep it on the this side of 40.
That's a good number. I mean, you get any deer, especially in the Southeast, that's a little bit keyed up. Mm. You know, they don't think something's quite right. And she may be sitting there dead still. And you aim and pick a spot and, you know, take your breath or whatever you do. And yeah. If that deer's keyed up, you know, the second she hears or sees your bow go off, your arrow's just going to stick in the ground. And she'll That's be right. 10 feet away gone. By the time that arrow gets there.
That's right. Gone.
Your daughter's been begging you to hunt since her little brother shot the big 8 last year. You've ran a fire, dissed the fields, got stuck, got unstuck. Planted food plots, fertilized, and prayed for rain. You moved trees, limbed roads, even bought one of those fancy cell cameras.
So what's your excuse?
LS Tractor.
Moultrie has pioneered the game management category. Today, Moultrie is one of the best-selling brands of feeders and seeders in the world, and they continue to innovate with new technology that gamekeepers will rely on. Moultrie products are always field-tested and designed for hunters by hunters, combining forward-thinking innovation with time-tested practicality. Moultrie, first in feeders since 1979. All right, so guys, Moultrie is offering our listeners a 15% site-wide discount at MoultrieFeeders.com. Use code MossyOak with a capital M, MossyOak, at MoultrieFeeders.com and get that 15% discount.
Dudley, when you get a deer up close and you finally realize, I'm fixing to get a shot, how excited do you get? Do you suddenly just everything, it was rushed?
Oh, yeah.
Are you able to slow
There's nothing down? Professional about that in my situation.
It's I look, I'm the same way. But, you know, you practice in the backyard and you're taking your time and you got your feet in the right place and you're just doing everything right. And then all of a sudden, there's a deer. And I've done it so many times. And you just rush through everything, forgetting. I mean, you really want to go on autopilot. Yep. and all that. Your grip and your feet and all that just happens like it's supposed to, but it rarely does for me.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's where it comes so important to that backyard practice is that you're not practicing really to say, oh, I can still do it. You're practicing just to get it built in. So it's just routine. You're not having to think about, okay, I got my hand here. I got my feet are good here. And because like you said, when you're in tree stand, you're not thinking of, all right, feet are shoulder width apart, you know, and all that stuff. You it's go time. You got to get in that, you know, I didn't serve our country military or anything, but I got to think it's like, you know, it's that mode of, you know, sniper mode or kill mode, whatever, where you're going into, hey, it's going down right now. We got to make this happen. And Bobby, like I said, that's how it works for me is that I go into, it's kind of a, I don't know, it's out of the body. You know, it's one of those things where your mind just takes over I think again about those deer the other day, I don't remember putting a pin on them. I don't, you know what I'm saying? Like after the fact, I'm like, man, I don't even remember putting that, but obviously I do think back, oh yeah, I had it right there on the money and, you know, evidenced by the shot and it was perfect, you know, but a lot of those things, like, I don't remember this happened. And you're just in that mode where it's time to get it done and you better have all the basics down pat. So when, I'm like you, man, I fall apart. Mm-hmm. I just don't. If I have to look at them a long time or they slow walking in or whatever, I have time to get all, you know, jacked up, man, it kills me. I'm shaking so bad. But yeah, you got to have that game down to where it's a routine and you're not thinking about it. And it's just kill mode when they get in there in bow range.
It's tough.
Lainey, you got another question?
Talking about ranging, you know, do you use a electronic range finder?
I do. I should. I do have one. Let me just start right there. I do have one. And again, I've missed twice this year. Mm-hmm. Missed two does early season here. And both of them, I didn't range them. Mm-hmm. Both of them were situational. That's about 25. And I shot for 25. And then afterwards, after the shot, after deer's run off unharmed, I ranged it 35, 33. And I didn't range it. And just didn't give enough juice and missed them. And so I'm like, why didn't I use that? That's sitting there right here on my side. You know, it's just rushed. It's just rushing. It's rushing and say, I don't need a rangefinder. I'm going to shoot her. You know, or maybe I didn't have time to use a rangefinder. Both those situations, I really didn't. They're coming through and I had to stop them and you know, should have ranged them, but I just, you know, I'm going too fast.
I'm guilty myself. You know, yeah. I try to get in there and range a couple of trees.
That's
you
right.
You know, when I first get set up, say, hey, if she's within here, I know she's in range.
Yeah.
Or there's always a she with me.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm rarely around long enough to wait on a buck.
That's right.
But yeah, so I would just a question I've always asked that to understand, because it is a lot, you know, to, okay, I got to get it out and then I got to range it and I got to stick it back up. And then is it hanging in front of me when I draw my bow? And then where is it? And do I, of course, I drop everything. So
yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Now it's a heck of a tool and I love it and I use it and I've got it. But like I said, I think, you know, the right thing to do is, you know, if I'm being smart, is to go, okay, that tree right there. And I do that, you know, I did it the other morning, but I mean, that tree right there is 20, that's 25, 30, and just get your whole spread lined out. So, you know, when she walks behind that, we're good, you know, doing that. That's the name of the game, is to range beforehand. So you're not sitting there scrambling and, you know,
and I heard you, do you use an adjustable sight or do you have one pin, two pin, or
yeah,
do you range and adjust with one pin?
I've got now, it's a single pin slider. It's a HHA Sports makes it. And it's a slider knob on it, up and down. This one's called a Rise sight, and RYZ, and it's got, you know, a single pin, but it's also got one below it, so it's a, you know, built underneath it, so it's kind of a two pin vertical sight. Mm-hmm. And here again, it's kind of that perfect setup where, you know, you got that 20 yard pin or whatever, and that second, you know, that second fiber optics, your next one down there, yeah, to be able to tell you what you got for the backup. But it's pretty slick. I mean, you know, you can slide it up and down, do whatever you need to, but mine usually never comes off of that first, you know, top pin stuff, you know, that's bow range for me. So
that sounds pretty simple, which is a good thing in bow hunting. Having one pin sounds simple, but having that adjustable, that's a little, you know, probably something you got to check and make sure it hadn't come loose. And
oh yeah, well, Bobby, that's it, man. You will find out sooner or later that checking it is the deal. I've done that before, man. You know, you're in there practicing, like we talked about, long bombing. Went out there at 80 yards and, okay, shooting 80, practicing before the hunt. Then get out there, sure enough, deer walks up, shoot 2 foot over the top of it.
80.
It's still on 80, you know. We never went back from 80, you know. And it was that, yeah, shot 2 over, and I'm like, what in the world?
What happened?
And then it's still on 80. So I've had that. I've lost, you know, I've dabbled with bow hunting turkeys, you know, in the years past. But, ooh, I mean, I got right with the Lord, and I don't do that anymore. But, like, I've done that, you know, shot over top of them, and it's always that same deal. I forgot to crank it back down. So, you know, it comes with just, once you figure that out and you get used to that thing, you know, that's the biggest mistake you'll make when you first go to a slider, you know, where you can adjust it, is forgetting to put it back, you know, on close range stuff.
Are you shooting a peep?
I got a peep, yeah, just a little old, you know, not the rubber hose, you know, peep, old school, but just a little peep in the string there. And that's all I use. You know, a lot of guys getting into the kisser button and the nose button and all kind of different points to, you know, reference points. But, you know, the peep sight's pretty much it for me. And I use the old, you know, finger release, just caliper release, and pretty. I mean, I'm a keep it simple.
It's a hunting rig.
Yeah.
I like to keep it simple.
Yeah, man. It's,
for sure. Speaking of not very simple at first, but I think it does get simple the more you use it. Let's talk a little bit more about the saddles.
Oh yeah.
You know, I've listened to other podcasts where, you know, it seems like everybody's using them. I'd like to think a lot of our listeners are still using lock-ons and ladders and may not be as far along in the saddle game.
Yeah.
So what are some pros and cons of them?
Yeah, man, absolutely. Now I remember, you know, going to the ATA show years ago, and there was a dude that had a booth there with the saddle, and everybody thought, what is this fool doing? You know, look like he's got a diaper on and talking about hunting out of this saddle, you know, and it just, for him, I don't remember who it was, what brand or whatever, but it never went anywhere. And then here we are, you know, full circle, and now it hit, and now it's, you know, it's being marketed and whatever, but it is, man. I mean, so the saddle, for somebody that may not know, it does. It's like the old school rock climbing harness kind of thing. It just goes around your butt and your crotch, and you're you're anchored up, and the concept is, you know, to lighten up everything. You got just that, but then you use your sticks to get up the tree, and then a small little mini platform, and you got the maneuverability, you know, and so you got super lightweight for mobile hunting. Go back in, and that's a beautiful thing about it. But a lot of guys, like you said, I mean, you watch enough social media, scroll enough, and it make you think, oh, everybody's using it because it's being, you know, well marketed. But, you know, there's a lot of lies those guys tell you too. You know, mm-hmm. I got buddies that say, oh man, it's as comfortable as my Summit Viper. And I said, dude, that's a lie. Straight out. There ain't yeah, nothing more. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, right. That's a comfortable stand, whatever. But it is more comfortable than you think. You know, it you know, for me, man, my tailbone gets hurt and, you know, sitting there, you know, a long time now. I like to be up and moving. So for me, that's kind of nice. I'm kind of leaning into it. My back doesn't bother me much. But for me, the biggest thing about it is the fact that there's a lot of those days where you go through the woods, talk about scouting, you find that feed tree, and you're like, gosh, dog, there's deer turds everywhere. I need to be hunting here tomorrow. No, you need to be hunting there this afternoon.
Right now.
And so with that stuff, I can have my backpack and I can pull that stuff up and go up the tree right there. I don't have to go back and get the stand or go put a ladder stand up or go hang a lock on. I can go up that tree and be up it, you know, pretty quick. And so for mobile hunting, I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I'd love to get into that game. And you were talking earlier about how high up in the tree you get now. And it does seem that people are getting lower and lower. And now that's one less step you have to carry. So
that's right.
So you're carrying climbing sticks with you?
Yeah, you've got to have some kind of climbing method, you know, sticks or whatever it is. So it's a lot
everybody used to use spurs, I think.
Yeah, the little spikes, I guess, like a lineman spike. Yeah, I've seen some guys using that, and they'll shimmy up that. But, you know, for me, it's just carrying these ultralight sticks. And I've got sticks that are actually 1 pound a piece, and I've got them down to literally – and it's a little 18 or 20 inch stick, and I carry four of those, and it's about half of what, you know, it's half of what the lightest stick ever was, you know, several years back. And, yeah, you get up there, and I just always try to, you know, jump into some brush, you know, some oak brush or, like I said, the beech tree for me is a good one, you know, to get in there and be covered up, and I don't have to go high, man. I mean,
and you're also behind the tree for the most part.
So that's right. Yeah.
You're breaking up your outline.
Yep. Yeah, you set up where you think, hey, he's coming out this way, and you got that tree to kind of break you up a little bit, and, you know, you're shooting off the left side of that tree, right side, whatever. But that left side for a right-handed shooter is a strong side, and opposite, you know, the weak side being the other. But once you get the hang of it, you can shoot anywhere, you know. I mean, it costs me. I'm not going to sit here and tell guys that it's, you know, the perfect deal, whatever, because it's cost me deer, you know, trying to get turned around, or a deer come on my weak side, and I can't get turned around, or, you know. But a lot of that's me not knowing, you know, how to use it. But, man, it's pretty slick for that mobile hunting. I mean, again, you're down to, you know, 10 pounds of stuff, all in, you know, included, 7 to 10 pounds as opposed to, you know, 30-pound tree stand on your
back.
Yeah, there's folks even doing it without steps. Like, you carry one stick.
One stick, yeah.
And, you know, you can get your ropes, you know, all the whatever knot you need, and you slide, almost like going up in a climber.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you just kind of pull yourself up as you go. And then once you're ready to get down, get this, you can rappel down.
Oh yeah.
So it's,
I might've misheard you. You said there's a platform up there with you too.
Yep. So you take, it's just most guys just call it a saddle platform, and it's just a mini, it just, you know, liken it to a hang on stand, like a mini hang on stand. This is just enough for you to put your feet on.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just enough for you to put your feet on. And it, you know, straps around the tree like a hang-on tree stand would. Again, it's like a 1 pound little aluminum platform, just enough where you get your feet on. And you can, you know, again, with that saddle, you're kind of hanging there, leaning back, feet on the platform, but you can kind of turn your feet and, you know, maneuver for the shot. And once you get the hang of it, it's pretty slick for, you know, just again, like Dudley said, using that tree for cover. Hiding from that deer, kind of easing around the tree to keep it between you and the deer as he's coming. And
it's a lot better than me hiding behind my bow, I imagine.
That's right. Yeah.
Stick it in front of me.
That's right.
But it certainly is not the kind of thing you just put in a backpack and go to the woods. You got to practice it in the yard.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to spend the time with it. My oldest son, he's 18, fixing to be 18, I guess, right? And he got out. This is his first year messing with it. And he's been up in the tree 3 times with it. And we practiced in the yard. I mean, like you said, Dudley, you've got to be there in practice. And that's any gear. You know, anytime right. you're climbing off the ground, you better be practicing. Mm-hmm. You know, never get off the ground without being anchored into something. And but he's been practicing. But, man, we were in Florida the other day, and he sends me a text. You know, he went over and hunted a little piece of public ground. He found some white oaks dropping, and he sends me his picture, and he can't be – you know, 9 foot off the ground. I see his feet on the platform, and then there's a 6-point buck right below his feet. You know, it's right down there. And, and he's tripping out because he's not very high. His first time, he's got this buck, you know, and he's letting him walk. He's being conservative. And, but he was just loving it. This fact that he went in, found the acorns, and climbed up this little tree and that kind of cover and the concealment. And here's a buck standing right. I mean, right under, he could jumped off and, you know, rode the sucker. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's right there. It's and so pretty cool.
You've done a great job getting your kids involved in the outdoors, it sounds like.
Man, we enjoy it. We've it's just what's been passed on to me, and I love to pass it on down for sure.
Amen.
Is there events that you can remember with your kids that, like, where you said you saw the light kind of go off in their eyes and you said, okay, he's gonna like this?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, they've all been a little bit different. My oldest son, you know, and my oldest daughter, she was we were in Montana when they were coming up, and they'd be chasing stuff across the yard and, you know, just whatever, little BB guns and bows. And you know, they just had that instinct, you know, that chase, the pursuit, you know. And for Remy, I mean, Remy's been the same way. You know, he's just right from the start. He didn't want to be left home. You know, he didn't want to be out there and left behind. But, you know, he always wanted to tag along and go and get after it. But I remember his first deer, like I said, it was, you were six, weren't you, Remy?
Yes, sir.
For your first one, 6 years old. And, my gosh, I just remember being in the blind. We popped up a little blind and set up in the field, and he was sitting on my leg. And we had the gun up on the tripod, and I just remember him sitting there straddling my leg, getting ready for that shot. And I remember him shaking so bad. Like, he was just shaking so bad. His knees were knocking. He was riding on my leg, getting ready for the shot. And I'd feel his knees. He would try to hold on, you know, try to stop the shaking. He'd squeeze my leg with his knees trying to, and he was just so tore up. And this little old buck come out, and it was, I called it a spiker, but what was it?
It was a three-pointer.
It was a three-pointer. He said, don't you short me nothing. Nah, it's a three-pointer,
you
son.
You can hang a ring on it.
That's right.
Yeah. But he shot that. And I remember I've got it on video, and he said, I never thought I'd get to kill one of these things. And he used to pray about it, man. He would pray about it at night. You know, he'd pray for his family, pray for, thank you, Jesus, for dying on the cross, and Lord, let me kill a deer.
You know? Well, me and you the same, buddy. I've said that prayer a lot.
Yeah, yeah. But that was the one for him. When he shot, he said, man, I never thought I'd get to shoot one, but tonight I did. And I remember him running across the field. He didn't have a gun in his hand or anything, but he was running to that deer to claim his first one. And it's been the first of a handful now. And that was the one that really, I mean, watching him do that first one for him personally, that was the one that just really, really took off. And he was a man, you know what I'm saying? He went from a boy to a man that day, even though he's only 6 years old. It was in him, you know, it was in him good.
And that's right.
Providing. That's right. Yeah.
Remy, do you remember shaking?
Kind of, but not that much.
I think he was probably shaking. That's what my kid tells me. I'm like, I'm like, quit shaking. Hey, and he's like, it's you, Dad.
That's
I'm
you.
Like, sorry about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it may have been. I know I was shaking. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I do remember that you were shaking bad.
Yeah, and they're always like, Dad, you're breathing. So, yeah, you're breathing. You're breathing so hard, Dad. Slow down.
I can appreciate that.
I like hearing stories. I think other people want to know that have young kids come along, just how you're getting them introduced. And, you know, the blood trail is another thing that I would expect you would tell me that your kids have enjoyed that. I hear that a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was kind of how a lot of it started off, too. You know, even going back beyond their first hunt was, you know, I'd go shoot a deer, you know, and you know, some people go back and get their dog, you know, go back and get their wife, whatever. You know, I go back and get the kids, you know, I want them to come and say, hey, I want them to experience that. And, you know, they're not ready to hunt yet, whatever, back then. And but that's an incredible way for them to be a part of it. And then they're learning the skill, you know, they're getting to see it, be a part of it, but learning that blood trailing skill. And it is, I mean, you know, I don't care whether the kid ever has a desire to hunt or not. They love. I mean, who doesn't love following the old scavenger hunt? Well, here's some blood. You know, here's some blood. And I've seen boys, girls, all of them just trip out at following blood trails. And these guys have been the same way. I mean, they would. They'd find it, and they'd holler back, hey, I got blood right here. You go ahead, you know, and just doing it, you know, and figuring it out. But, yeah, blood trail's a great way to introduce them and get them in there for those first opportunities and ease them into it. And so it's a good one.
So with kids, I'm assuming most states, are they still around 35 pounds as a minimum weight on bows?
You know, Bobby, that's a good question, and I would have to see what it is. You know, 35 and 40 is kind of what I always heard. Yeah, I would just encourage folks to look and see, but that's what I've always heard it is. And I don't know if that's changed with, you know, the efficiency of these bows nowadays, you know, state by state, but that's kind of what everybody used to think. You know, anything less than 35, you better just go home and work out a little more and get beefed up to where you can shoot more weight. But yeah, man, these bows these days, 40 pounds efficiency. I mean, you can kill deer with a 40 pound bow, no doubt. They're just machining them so incredibly.
So you probably just, you know, in that scenario, you're just limiting yourself to probably 22, 24, 25 yards.
Yep.
But those at that poundage range with a broadhead, they're lethal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely. My boy that, like I said, my older boy he killed one when he was 12, and I know his bow wasn't any more than 40, you know. And again, shooting a little Matthews compound youth bow, he had a Rage broadhead. And it was a story like I talked about with Remy. Came home from hunting what I thought was a hot spot. Nothing happened. My boy comes out the door, and he's my son Aiden comes out the door and man hugs me. He said, "Dad, I got him." And I said, "What are you talking about?" I shot a buck in the heart. And I'm like, "No, come on. What are you talking about?" And the same deal. Went up by the food plot. This is his first hunt by himself ever. And goes up there and had a buck walk out and shoots him with this little lightweight bow set up. Shoots a deer in the heart, and we let it sit overnight because I wasn't sure. And he, you know, he was just excited. I thought he's just overexcited, but sure enough, next morning, find that deer 60 yards where he shot it, and Rage broadhead. And like I said, I'm going to call it a 40 pound bow because I know it weighed him more. And so pretty efficient bows are making now.
Pretty cool.
What part of your story of preaching about bow hunting, or what should we be asking? You know, what do you want to tell?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, and we just did an article right here at Mossy Oak. Guys need to see. I can't remember. The guys can post it up. I put it down, but it was something like five bow hunter fails that'll cost you a deer. So I want to encourage people to go check that out. It's been a few, you know, I think last week or so. Check it out at mossyoak.com. But those five fails are some of the practical stuff, you know, that I think people overlook. You know, a lot of guys say, "Man, you need to practice, shoot 100 arrows a day and shoot 100 arrows a day." But there's a lot, for me, it's a lot more of the stuff of just the basic stuff that goes wrong. You know, it's not about, "Oh, I didn't make the 100-yard shot," or "I didn't make this." It's those little things, you know. It's forgetting your gear. You know, one of the biggest fails, you know, is we forget gear. You know, we get up there, and like I said, it's 80-yard pin still set. Oh, my release is sitting in the truck. You know, my quiver's back there at the truck or back on the front porch. You know, forgetting some of those things. And I tell people all the time, I said, you know, you're going to forget something, but you need to make sure to minimize the stuff and make sure the stuff you're forgetting is not the ones that's a deal breaker, you know. Mm-hmm. Make sure it's not a game changer. I've left my bow, man. I've got to the farm and my bow's sitting back there, you know, on the front porch, you know, and hanging up and just
I those kinds of remark.
You've been there before. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
that's right. But then, you know, you've got some that are, I think about, you know, just, we have the, well, shoot, what was the other one I was going to say?
Well, I tell you what, while you're looking at that.
Yeah, I'm going to find them right here.
The mossyoak.com, some of the articles change out every few days.
Yep.
They're really good.
Yeah, and Brody is commonly up there with his articles.
Yeah, so I would you know, encourage our listeners to every few days just go check out mossyoak.com and see what's refreshed there.
Good stuff, yeah, all the time. But what I was going to say, I just pulled it up here on the site, but you spend too much time on your phone. You know, again, everybody talk about archery tactics and tips for hunting tips. I said, man, what about just the practical stuff? You know why you're not killing deer? Because you're on your phone. You know what I'm saying? You're right. Scrolling on your phone too much. I can't think of all the times, can't count the times where I'm sitting there looking and, oh, look at that guy. He just killed one of the, oh, man, look here. And, you know, texting your buddies or trying to do work at home. And that's the beauty of this. You can do some work from your phone in the woods. But, man, I can't count the times where I've looked up from scrolling on social media. And there's a deer that just walked past the shooting lane, just walked from bow range out of bow range. And so, man, you want to kill more deer, stay off your phone.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. You look up and you see the rear end of the rear. Deer. And what was that?
Yeah, that's right.
Totally guilty.
That's
you know,
right.
And you know, used to, say you're in the middle of the woods, you may have detected that deer at 70 or 80 yards, mm-hmm. but you're flipping through your email and – He's gone.
Checking your DMs.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And it gets me every time. And I've written articles about it. I've talked about it. Tell my kids don't do it. But I'm just, you know, I'm just that attention. guy that I'm doing the same thing. I'm like, oh, son, I just missed one. There he
is. we hit on this a little earlier, but, you know, what about the moment of truth for bow hunting?
Yeah.
I'm sure Remy has an answer as well, but, you know, what would y'all tell somebody that has not really bow hunted? That's where I learned from my mistakes the most is not making it happen correctly at the moment of truth.
Yeah, man, failure is definitely one of the best teachers. But Remy, what do you do to calm your nerves when the shot's coming, man? You killed a deer last week. What did you do when it stepped out and you had to watch it a few minutes? What do you do to calm down? Or did you even get fired up and nerves going crazy? What's a good way to help you calm down?
Well, I'm always like all nervous, sometimes even with squirrels.
I hear you.
Normally I just like take big breaths and stuff, deep breaths. And really, I just try to like chill out or something.
That's good.
That's smart.
Well, and there's some scientific stuff. I don't know if it's one of y'all's podcast or who it was. Somebody was talking about what taking a deep breath does to your body. Literally just. We hear that, I'll take a deep breath, but something it does when you
physiologically.
Yeah, it's something it does to your nervous system or whatever, and sets big. But you know, I'm like you, Dudley. You have a lot of times where, you know, you've done all the shooting, and again, I don't care how much you shoot and how much you can hit that pie plate out there. If you can't handle the moment of truth, then you're going home with a tag in your pocket. And so, really, just calculating that time and that moment. You know, again. It happens so fast, and you know, I tell people all the time, I said, you need to be thinking, don't just like, okay, if he gets to there, we're good. You know, you need to be thinking, okay, he's here. I've got a window there. Be looking ahead. You know, I've got a window here I can draw. I've got a window here I can draw. I can, you know, do this. And talking yourself through that and just, okay, I'm going to, you know, for me, a lot of times it's like, all right, I'm fixing to kill this doe. She's coming out. That's what I'm here for. And I get tore up over the does. I mean, I don't, some people are like, oh, it's just a doe, man. It ain't just a doe, man. That's what I came for. You know what I'm saying? I'm a meat eater. I love it. And so those does, you know, make my, they drive me crazy. So when I see it, you know, when I get in that mode, I'm just like, all right, she's going home. We just need to figure out what point we're going to shoot her. You know, she's riding home with us. What, you know, what point? And seeing those, you know, opportunities beforehand. Because a lot of guys are like, oh, I need to bleat. She's in that hole. No, you need to be ready to bleat right before she steps into that hole, you know, shooting lane or whatever, and kind of calculating all those little details. But I think one of the biggest things people say, well, how I want to be a, you know, stone cold killer in the woods. I want to be able to shoot deer and just be, you know, I want to be effective, you know. And to me, I tell people all the time, I said, you need to shoot every legal animal you can. You want to be, you know, don't be that guy or girl saying, oh, it's going to want my first deer to be a 160. You know, I said, you better shoot that 60-pound nanny, you know, what you need to shoot, and every one of them that walk by, so you can get those numbers, notches in your belt, whatever you want to call it.
Experience.
Get that experience. Yeah, man, because, and I tell these guys, I said, shoot the squirrel. It's legal. Shoot, you want to, you know, we eat squirrels. We eat them all the time. Shoot the squirrel. Live targets does what nothing else can. I don't care if you can, you know, put 100 arrows at 100 yards and all day long, you can do it all you want to. But if you can't handle a live target in there, man, and keep your breathing down and keep your nerves in check, and then you're going home with tags in your pocket.
That was my biggest problem when I was a new bow hunter, was trying to figure out when I was going to physically draw the bow back.
Yeah.
You know, when that deer was, you know, they can hear a pin drop when the wind isn't blowing. So that was, for me, was just trying to figure out exactly when to draw my bow back and when to be ready to draw my bow back.
That's right. Yeah,
tough stuff,
and it's experience that teaches it. But I'll say this: the Remy's of the world, they've got it a little better than people my age and older, because we didn't have videos to watch of other people doing it.
That's right.
And I mean, you would read a magazine, and there might be a photograph telling you, okay, you know, this deer's head's down, and the front shoulder, he's stepping forward and exposing. You would have those kind of images to lock into, but now you can watch, you know, on YouTube, there's just tons of opportunities for kids to see what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. They can watch it, and yeah, it's a beauty. I mean, it's the social media and YouTube, all that stuff. It's a blessing and a curse, if you will. But I mean, they've got it. You know, I tell these guys all the time, like, I don't know how to do that. I said, well, go YouTube that sucker. You know, there's somebody that's already done. There's some goob that built a video telling you how to do it step by step. You know, you want to know how to do it, go watch it, and they'll walk you through every step of it. And so, yeah, they're definitely at an advantage today. But I really try to make sure these guys, don't have all the, we utilize those tools, but also want to make sure they have that woodsmanship skills too, and don't rely on, you got all these different, shooting, gun vices and all these things. They don't have to hold, they just pull the trigger now, and those are great. We use them, but I'm like, man, I need to teach my kids how to shoot offhand. I mean, you almost say, what happens when they don't have the tripod or whatever, and just a lot of those skills that you can get, technology aside, we need to make sure we're not missing out and getting them back to the basics that they need to have.
For sure.
That's good points.
Reminds me of that squirrel hunting tip from last week.
Laying on his back.
Yeah.
Did you guys get a chance to? That was a really
good. That was really good. Yeah, I wish I could have been sitting in on that one. That was a good piece. We really enjoyed that one. Sure did.
600 squirrels a year.
Crazy.
You're tearing them up.
Crazy. Yeah,
it's a lot.
That was good stuff.
Well, so, what we'd hoped to do with this was just get everybody fired up about bow season, and hearing from somebody that eats and breathes it and sleeps it. That's you. I mean, it's a big part of your life.
It is, yeah.
And I think from what I've gathered, I mean, you spend a lot of time teaching people how to get started and how to do all that. But oftentimes there's guys, I mean, we've all been after it a long time, and sometimes you kind of just get a little complacent about things, and it takes a few hunts every year to work out the kinks and just get the cobwebs out, Lanny.
Oh, and no doubt about that, especially with bow hunting.
Yeah. Well, that's me. Like I said, I've missed a couple this year. I've killed two. Or three now, but I've missed two does as well. And I'm sitting there preaching to my older boys, hey, look, man, I tell them all the time. I said, slow down, shoot straight. That's kind of the parting deal. We'll pray right there before we split up, but slow down and shoot straight. And slow down thing is the biggest part of it, because we rush. Didn't range find it, slow down. Missed him out there at 35. Well, dude, he was coming to you. Mm-hmm. Why didn't you let him come on and shoot him at 15? He was walking, We just, I got to shoot him now. And that now or never kind of thing, that shouldn't be in our mind. Right. That is all I had. We kind of patch up a bad, move or mistake or judgment call with, what's the only thing I could do. So no, you could hunt him again tomorrow. You don't have to send it, today.
Even the editor of bowhunting.com misses a deer.
Absolutely. Misses a bunch of deer every time, all the time.
Even cooler that he admits it.
You remember our buddy Daryl Daig and his bow, messing with his bow one day. I looked at it, and on the inside of his limb, he had a big sticker that said, think.
Yeah. Same
I was
idea.
Like, hey, there it is right there.
That's right.
Shout out to you, Daryl.
Yeah. Because it will make you quit thinking.
Oh, you need to think. That's right. That's what he's saying. Where's he coming? What's he doing? All those other kind of things. Yeah. When do I draw?
I'm bad about rushing. I'm just bad about that.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because you're pretty patient in the woods, on turkeys at least.
It's just I can remember the first deer I killed with a bow, and I was shooting. I anchored in the corner of my mouth.
Yeah,
it's a true story. But I'd been
with the fleshing.
Well, the release just anchored right there in the corner of my mouth, and I had been so many times and hadn't seen a deer, it was just a struggle just to see a deer, and I finally got in a place, and I just all of a sudden there's a doe right underneath me. And then she lines up going dead away from me. So all my pins fit on her in her chest or on her back. And I'm thinking to myself, there's no way I can miss her. And I remember grinning so much, I couldn't get my release to where I wanted my release. And it was a problem. I was like, oh, my gosh.
I gotta quit smiling.
Smiling too big. That's awesome.
But I can remember that. I was about probably 16.
I like it when all my pins are on them.
That was very exciting.
Yeah, that's tight there. That's awesome.
They're so much fun.
Much fun, and it's such a great thing to do with your friends and family too. So,
Dudley, why don't you ask him some?
We rapid fire.
Yeah, why don't we rapid fire?
Well, we've already answered a couple of them.
How high? No.
Rapid fire is brought to you by Springfield Armory, which we've look, guys. Y'all need to sign up for the. That we're giving away a squirrel rifle. It's a Springfield model 2020 22 long rifle with a Leopold 2-7 scope.
You got squirrel about squirrel smasher.
Got about 3 more weeks to sign up.
All right, so y'all ready to do the rapid fire?
Rapid fire. Let's roll.
All right, so do y'all want to
double up here? Do you want to? I'll ask you first and ask Remy next.
Yeah, or is it something we could race to answer first? Or is it yeah, I mean, he might want to try to.
Okay.
No, I don't know. Whatever you tell us, Doug, we can.
You think we can? They can both answer?
Sure. Sure.
Okay. It's all right. Well, let's try this. Okay. All right. So, are you ready?
We ready.
White meat or dark meat?
White meat.
White.
Panfish or bass fish?
Panfish.
Bass.
Vianney sausages or potted meat?
Vianney sausage. Bring it.
Same with him.
There you go.
Biscuit. Jelly or no jelly?
Jelly.
A little butter and jelly all day long.
Squirrel with gravy or squirrel and dumplings?
Ooh, dumplings.
Dumplings.
Fixed or mechanicals or both?
Yeah, it's going to be both for me.
Both.
Bow stand. Above 20 or below 20?
Below.
Below.
Would you rather hunt a hot persimmon tree or a hot acorn tree?
Man, I love them sweet persimmons. Sweet and bitter.
Persimmons.
Music. Rock or country?
Country.
Country.
Which one, though?
Country, definitely.
No, but what do we jam to all the way down here? Who's your favorite?
Johnny Cash.
There you go. Oh, I like country. That. We might have to ding the bell for that.
Ding that for sure.
And this is kind of harsh. Would you rather get Lyme's disease or get bit by a rattlesnake?
Mm. Oh, my gosh.
That's a tough one, Dudley.
I was going to say the insurance on the rattlesnake is what, I don't know.
Can you say neither?
Yeah, neither. You say neither. Yeah, I'm going neither on that one.
I'll take neither. Yeah, it's kind of a cop out, but all right.
Yeah.
Are you a scent control nerd or do you just hunt the wind and the thermals?
I just go full blown stinky and hunt the wind.
There you go.
You a stanky too?
Yeah, he's definitely stinky.
Like father, like son. And then would you rather travel to turkey hunt or hunt at home?
Right there at home for me.
At home.
Home base. Home. All right.
Good job.
Good job, guys.
Yes, sir. That's good.
So we had a little bit of disagreement there, but not much.
Yep.
So we've also got a trivia question, Dudley. You've kind of got one prepared about, I think. And Richie, who's going to be the prize winner?
He's going to be playing for a Turner 4400. Prize is a box of Nosler custom ammo of his choice.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That's some good stuff.
That is some good stuff.
Nosler.
Heck yeah.
We're doing a bow show, but we're talking about the best ammunition out there.
Hey, man,
that's right. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a tree nerd question.
Ooh.
So, and it's kind of tough.
Yeah.
There's one answer that's really easy, but I'm going to give you the answer to that. So hopefully some folks will learn something today.
Yeah.
Whether you get this right or not. So
I wonder if
we're going to know this. There is a common tree that is dioecious, which means some individuals have male parts that make the pollen, and some trees have female parts that make the fruits. And the first one that comes to mind is persimmons. Not every persimmon tree makes fruit.
That's right.
Some of them are boys. There are several other mast producing tree species out there. I'm just going to say oaks are not, but can name one more mast producing species that is dioecious, that can be male or female.
That's a tough one.
Lordy mercy, Remy. What do we got?
So just think of some fruit trees that
we've raised the pears. We've raised pears and plums and
apples.
None of those.
I can smell Lanny's, the wood burning in Lanny's head.
Mm. I'm supposed to know this.
We got some cherries.
You're supposed to know this, Dave.
Way easy now.
That's a tough one.
Yeah,
dioecious.
Yeah. I knew what that was, but
Man, I hate it for this dude trying to get some Nosler bullets, man. We're letting him down here. I'm trying to think what else we hadn't.
Have you got a clue, Dudley?
Can we phone a friend?
Yeah, I don't even buy that.
Let me see. We've got several of them at native nurseries. I'll tell you one that comes is also a favorite bow hunting tree in the South. A lot of people refer to them as bean trees.
Oh, really?
The old what are you gonna say?
Big old long.
The old
you get it right.
Locust pods or whatever.
Yeah,
that's it.
Locust pods.
Yeah, you got it.
Is that it?
Yeah. Honey, is it
honey locust?
Honey locust. Yeah. Okay. My gosh. I was thinking fruit. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Red mulberry.
Okay. I got you.
My guess was going to be mulberry, but I was not real confident. Because it seems like every mulberry tree I see has fruit on it.
All the gums, like black gum, tupelo gum, they're male and female.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
There's a bunch of them out there.
Dropping that knowledge on us.
No kidding. That was heavy stuff.
I think that's the hardest trivia question we've ever had, by the way.
Yeah, that really
that's
was.
Good to know. We slid past that one. Well, that's pretty good.
Dudley said earlier, he said, I want to stump him.
So, yeah, you did. You did that. It took some help. Hey, can we ask y'all, I don't know if how this works for y'all, but we've got a trivia question for y'all. If we can spin it back around. We were coming back from Panama City the other day. Was it yesterday?
I think so.
And we're listening to the Gamekeeper podcast, and my wife says, who's that poor guy that can't seem to get a word in edgewise? It was one of you three here. Was it A? Bobby? Dudley? Or Lanny? Which one of y'all would she be referring to and say, that poor guy can't get a word in edgewise?
Well, it wasn't toxic. Who can't? Who keeps getting cut off is what she was referring to.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
I'm going to say it's Dudley.
Ring that bell. Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. And I don't know. He wasn't getting cut off. I think he just, he just whatever. And my wife don't listen to many of them.
But was that on the squirrel one?
That was on the squirrel.
Yeah. He was pretty quiet on the squirrel.
He was pretty quiet.
And I was very talkative on the squirrel one. Which I'm always talkative. But
I was really enjoying it. Maybe that's why I didn't say much.
I'm kind of into squirrel hunting right now.
Well, I kind of like somebody asking us.
I do too. That was good. I like that. Mm-hmm. And we got it right.
Of course we got it did. Right. Maybe we need to do that. Have a trivia question for us where our guest has to come up with a trivia question.
Maybe.
Well, we've got Bobby a prize here.
All right. What do we got?
We got him a prize, and that's what he's playing for. It wasn't anything as nice as Nosler, but we got this rally shirt that you pull out when things get tough in the season. And this is our rally shirt for Bobby, and we make sure everybody have one of those. Something's got to die to die. When things get tight, you put that under your Mossy Oak shirt, and you'll
be good to go.
Changing the game, the rally shirt.
So. You got to get your broadheads out.
That's right.
It comes in this weekend in Alabama, and I got a plan already.
There you go.
You got your toothbrush in your quiver, too?
Ooh.
It's been a long time since I had a toothbrush. I know what you're talking about, cleaning out the blades.
Cleaning broadheads, yes.
I have done that before, though.
No.
I was honored to visit Bobby's place last week.
Did you go to the Ponderosa?
Well, we might have left about an hour early for Rick and Bubba.
Oh, I made a swing
by. We stopped by, and it's a really cool place.
It is a cool
well
place.
Thought out.
Yeah.
And was there a Bible verse on there? You flashed it up there so fast.
It is. It's 1 Peter 2:24 is a reference underneath it. Some people are like, does it say something's got to die? But it says he personally carried our sins in his body on the cross. We could be dead to sins and made righteous. And so that's what it's all about for us is just getting over ourselves, man. That's kind of the thing.
Right.
He died on the cross for us. And that's what we that believe, that's what we're hanging on to. But also speaks to the fact we got to get over ourselves, man. There's a lot of folks posting selfies. We're so proud of ourselves. But, man, if we get out of our way and get out of the way and enjoy it, that's what it's all about. And so getting over ourselves, man, enjoying what he's blessed us with and creation. And that's what it is all about for me is my faith in the Lord, my family, and hunting. And, I get those out of order a lot of times, way too many times. But, man, that's the mission for me is to try to keep those in track and make sure these next guys coming along know the same. So,
amen. That's a good one right there.
Heck yeah, it really is. I'm glad you said all that. That's really good. And it's hard to keep all those parties in line.
You gotta work on it every day.
I struggle really hard.
You work on it every day. That's right.
Daily.
Wow. So, how do guys follow you on social media?
Yeah. So, Brody Swisher, just my name, Brody Swisher. Also, Hunting Roots. That's kind of been our story. Hunting Roots, just digging back to our roots and helping newcomers establish theirs. Hunting Roots on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, bowhunting.com. And encourage folks to come check us out there on the website. And so all those different pieces. And Remy's usually in the mix somewhere in some of those photos. You'll find him. And huntingroots.com website as well.
Yeah. Well, so I was real excited when I saw Remy walk in the door with you. And I told myself, I said, this is – I knew you. But I said, it just confirms what I was – I mean –
bringing Remy, just I think it helped. He enjoyed coming up in here and seeing the.
I should have brought my two.
We need some. Well, I was going to say we need some help at the nursery. So if you just want to leave him here for a couple weeks,
it's fall break.
We can put him to work.
Yeah, mine are on fall break too. We were just in the woods, and their mom picked them up in the parking lot. Should have brought them in here.
Well, I was thinking they were probably outside cleaning up the tractor.
Yeah. Well, she scooped them up. I forgot to feed them, and they got mad.
That's awesome.
Well, Remy, thank you for coming.
Yeah, I'm glad I got to be here.
Appreciate you being here, buddy.
We'd like to hear this time next year. We'd like to hear another deer story out of you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man.
And y'all bring your bows next time. We got lots to hunt.
I know. We got to get down here and spend a few, more than just an in and out trip. Spend some time down here chasing some critters.
Yeah. No, we got them.
Absolutely.
I know Bobby does.
We do. And why is everybody looking at me on that? Yeah. Landon's got the 4,000 acre lease.
That's right.
4,000.
Well, it's a big one.
Turn us loose. Yeah,
we got plenty of room. Y'all come on.
Yeah. And y'all need to go. We need to make sure we get you to the retail store.
Yeah, man.
That's always a good thing. So, what are we forgetting to do here at the end, Richie? And how do guys go sign up for that rifle?
I will double check that.
Just go to the Mossy Oak Gamekeeper website.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Richie.
I love it.
No problem. No problem.
Just go to suchandsuchandsuchandsuch.com. That's right. Just go to the Gamekeeper website.
Dub.
Yeah. So, guys, we sure appreciate you listening.
Yeah,
we
appreciate y'all.
We got the TV show is on Tuesday nights. Brody, y'all get a chance to watch that? Do y'all have TV up there where you are?
We do. We just got something installed. I've been trying to find the app that you mentioned a while back for watching stuff. What was it? The
Friendly TV app.
Yes, we got to get that. That's what we've been working on that. I've mentioned that to my family after you mentioned it, and so I want to get in on that. But
yeah, that's exactly how I watch it. I think it's $7. I told people it was $6.99, but I think it's $7.99.
It's cheaper than Lanning's weather app.
That's right.
No, it's not. So that's a month. And your weather, how much is that?
$20 a year.
Yeah, $20 a year.
So.
Got me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Thank you so much, Brody, for being here. Remy, thank you. Please say hello to the rest of your family. Mossy Oak appreciates what you do.
Well,
we really do.
We thank you guys. And, man, we've been honored and blessed to be a part and just to work alongside with what you guys are doing and just love what the brand stands for, conservation and family and just passing it on for the future. And we love that. And really blessed to be a part of it.
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
All right. Why don't you say goodbye, Dudley?
Goodbye, Dudley.
Get us out of here, Richie.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Gamekeeper Podcast. And be sure to tune in again. Subscribe to Gamekeeper Farming for Wildlife Magazine. And don't miss the Mossy Oak Properties Fistful of Dirt Podcast with my good buddy, Ronnie Cuz Strickland.